So next time in part 11, there's a shot we may finish because I only have three more places to go, and they're not like 30 verses each or anything. So we might actually finish the part on good in 11 parts. All right, this is the Afterburn. Welcome to the Afterburn, okay? And you're welcome to come up and ask questions, make comments, and if you're online, you can go ahead and start typing them in, and the Shamash team will take care of, you know, recording those and then reading them over the mic when we go to the stream. All right, Brianna's first.
Okay, I have two things. All right, first one, I have it on my phone. You can't do good if you're refusing to or can't see him properly. That's what you said, I think, probably.
Yes, that's
okay.
Good.
So I understand that some people refuse to acknowledge him even after having their bubble popped. But my question is referring to, does refusing to see him properly mean you don't understand the essence of who he is? Or is it that you don't understand him and your personal relationship with him?
Well, it's kind of both. Look, the point is, in order to have a right relationship with someone, in terms of if you're submissive, like, well, in a vertical way, it could be a parent, it could be an employer, okay, a ministry, but whatever, husband, wife, so the wife to the husband, they have to see that person correctly and understanding who they are, what they're doing, what their role is, what their position is in your life, okay? And so, you know, I help a lot of some of the ladies that have never had a good father in their lives, never had that experience. And so that, the reason I do that, one of the reasons I do that is because they have a hard time seeing that role properly because they've never experienced it. They don't know what that role is supposed to look like, all right? And so you would, if you really truly embraced who and what Elohim is, you would fear and tremble and with reverence do everything he said. Okay, so when people don't, they just don't seem to really understand who they're dealing with, right, and what they're dealing with. The same thing with ministry. You come and ask for help from me or Elder or Rabbi Tom. If you don't see us right, you're not going to receive that information correctly in terms of the drive to actually put it into action. So it really comes down to that, okay? Now, as far as doing good, when it says, like, if you don't see him correctly, you're not going to do good, that's not exactly true. We can do things that are good from above. A lot of people don't murder. A lot of people don't commit adultery. A lot of people don't steal. A lot of people don't do a lot of things that Torah says not to do, regardless of their belief system. The point is, you're not going to do the holistic, like the complete package, unless you believe, okay? Unless you understand who he is, unless you're covenanted. I mean, we naturally do a lot of things. I mean, actually, most governments have laws that match those things. That doesn't mean now you have a relationship with Elohim. It just means that the world as a whole has picked up that some of these things are necessary for society to work right, all right? But to be good in any full sense, you need to be covenanted and submissive to his instructions, okay?
Do you think like a good example of that, I guess not really a good example, but an example of that would be like the children of Israel refusing to acknowledge him, and so because they couldn't see him properly, they had to make the entity of the golden calf as him because they just weren't seeing or refusing to see him properly?
Okay, so it's not about seeing him properly. They weren't seeing him how he manifests himself. That's a problem a lot of people have. In other words, he went out of his way, so to speak, and destroyed Egypt and gave them signs and wonders. And they're all, so he showed himself to them, but they wanted, this is where, again, we are wise in our own eyes and fools, but they wanted to see him because they were used to things like idols. They wanted to see him in some sort of physical thing they could look at, pick up, hold, go over to. Seeing him, that's why Paul goes through here and says, but we see him in the oceans, in the mountains, in the trees, in the clouds, in the sun, the moon. We see him. We see what he does and what he brings to the equation without actually physically seeing him. But the people wanted something they could point to and say, that's him. And that's where they missed the picture. So, you know, we don't often appreciate that he shows himself. That's really the question we should all ask us. Is he showing himself to you and you're just not seeing it? You know, what is he doing in your life that shows himself to you and you're not seeing it? Okay, go ahead. Because you want to see him a certain way. You want him to do things a certain way. Then I'll believe that he is. So who are you
kind
to
kind of putting
that
him in a box, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah.
Second question. So from the evil teaching, we know that evil means causing harm or in suffering, or one of the definitions. So you said that if you are doing evil, you don't receive Elohim, or you don't understand him fully. You don't get it. So my question is, in a relationship, or if you show evil or cause harm and suffering in a relationship that's not just with the Father, does that also mean that, like, you won't receive him? Does that make sense?
I understand.
Like, if you're causing harm and suffering to other people or yourself even, does that also mean that you won't be able to receive him because you are doing evil in a way? Or is it only in context to him?
No, wait. Okay, so first of all, it's not that you won't receive him. You're doing it because you're not receiving him, okay? Because if you received him, you wouldn't do those things. So there's a part of him that you've not fully embraced, and that's why you're doing those things, right? But also, let's go back to the evil teaching. Let's not think that doing something evil is the same as doing something as persistently your new behavior pattern, okay? All of us have the capacity and have all too often done things that cause others harm, okay, and suffering and that kind of thing. But that wasn't like necessarily, although some of you had spouses and other family members that did it to you consistently. I'm just saying but most people will do that and then they'll be sorry about it and repent and then they won't do it again, okay? So it's not to just say that, well, if you do something, quote unquote, that's causing harm or suffering, that you're not able to receive him. No, it just shows you haven't fully embraced him in your relationship with him, which would help you to cease doing those things. Does that make more sense?
So, like, if you notice that you're continuously doing that, you can, I guess maybe if you struggle with it, you could maybe start to be more aware of it so that you can fix it and not, because obviously there's a relationship issue both ways if you're not understanding what you're doing wrong.
All right, so let me use a parent-child analogy, okay? So all of you remember this as children, when you were children, we'll say, and you've probably caught your children doing it, that something's going on and you hear it and you walk in the room, or something's going on and you're doing it, and all of a sudden a parent walks in the room and everything changes all of a sudden. Now, what's the problem going on there? They haven't fully embraced the relationship they have with you so that they should be doing even when you're not there. Okay? So as soon as you walk out of the room, whatever you said goes out the window, okay? Not always, but when those kind of things happen. See, we have a very challenging situation. We're little children having to do things when we don't know that Father's actually watching because we don't see him, okay? The children didn't know you could see them from where you were and hear them from where you were, and they're doing whatever they're doing, and they think you don't know. We do that with the Heavenly Father. We act like, well, he doesn't know, okay? So we act like foolish little children. Because you'll just come in and bust a child's house. What are you talking about? I wasn't doing that. I said, I saw you doing it. What do you mean you saw me? Well, you didn't realize that there's a mirror on the wall there, and from this room, I can look at the mirror and see you. They're not that bright to figure that stuff out. They also don't understand how sound travels. Why'd you say that to your sister? I didn't say that. I heard you say it. Okay, some of you parents are laughing because you've had that conversation recently with one of your children. Okay, this morning. All right, so, but that's the thing. If we understood that the Almighty Creator of all things is aware of all things at all times and is paying attention, all right, well then there you go, okay? All right, Shira?
Thank you, Rabbi Steve, so much. I just have such a picture as I'm listening, and kind of like 11 years of absorbing your teachings is all kind of coming into a concept, a thought in my mind that I need to realize and remember all the instruction that you've been giving, the wisdom, the understanding, the knowledge, all of that is to guard my joy. You're trying to guard our joy, and the smacking is necessary, and the Rosh Kodesh is when you encourage us is necessary, and the counseling you give us is necessary, and it's like playing tennis. When I was young, I wanted to play tennis, and my mom had this old racket, and it thudded around, and I tried my best to learn how to play tennis with it, and somebody finally took me aside and said, you need to get that racket restrung, or you need to get a new racket or something. And so what I finally learned was there's a sweet spot in the middle of the racket. If you want to get that ball over the net in a way that the opponent won't be able to return it and get a point, you have to hit that sweet spot. And then it just feels so good. It's like, wing! And joy is like that. I feel so strongly listening to you today. You're guarding over here and stripping away and relieving me and so many of us of all the stuff that was put on us. And, you know, like your Aunt Sue is going to hell forever and going to burn, you know. I mean, starting with that, and you're relieving the extra burdens that were put on us. You're relieving the things that Yeshua never taught we had to do. And then over here, you're kicking us in the, you know, tushy because of the things that we need to do or avoid doing. And coming into bringing that slowly into balance, you want us to hit that sweet spot. And it just occurred to me how precious it is to understand that Elohim is happy, that he isn't standing over waiting for me to to mess up. And last week I shared how I had to forgive myself of some things and realizing I've been punishing myself because I hadn't gotten rid of that guilt yet. So another thing, coming off and exposing that joy. The joy of Yahweh is our strength.
Amen.
The joy of Yahweh characterizes Yeshua because David saw him. He said, Yahweh has anointed you with the oil of joy above all your companions. And Paul talked about the joy unspeakable full of glory. And Nehemiah talked about the joy of Yahweh that is your strength. And I'm just finding, like, you know what? If I can't find a way to guard that joy and let, not real joy, not fake, you know, fluffy stuff, but the joy that's on that bedrock, even when I'm not feeling too good about stuff, but it's just a deep knowing that Father is full of joy, and he wants me to be full of joy. And he's just using you so powerfully, and Elder, and, you know, Rabbi Tom, and the Rebetzins. I mean, we're being shepherded so that we can have that joy that is our strength. And I just believe so strongly it's the joy that's going to get us over the net. It's going to get us into the kingdom. That's how we're going to endure.
Amen. Shouts of joy and victory resound in the tents. Okay, there you go. Shouts of joy and victory resound in the tents. Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. So, and if you want to understand joy, I did do a teaching that was intended to help you feel joyful called Rejoice. I smacked you pretty good. But it was an attempt to do a light teaching, but understanding the need to rejoice. All right, Ashley.
I wanted to come up here and ask, forgive me, I'm trying to put it into words. I need to jump in my head for a moment. It's one of those times. But the quite often I get this. When I run into a difficult situation, I'm wanting to do things that's not in line with Yahweh's idea of being covenant, or his ruling of what a covenant is. And I don't act upon those. But is it okay to kind of get a, I don't want to call it high, but get joyous or whatever you have it in that? Because then it's like, oh, I have the choice. I can do the hard thing, which is the right thing, or I can do the easy route and use the tool I want to get what I want.
I mean, look, that's what James was trying to say, and count it all joy when you're in a trial, right? So you get an opportunity to make hard choices. You should get joyful about that.
Okay, that's what my question, okay, yeah. So that's okay to do that.
Sure.
Okay. And then also regarding this, I kind of want to take it a step further. Finally, in my dreams, and I think it happened last night, either last night or last 2 days have been fuzzy for me, so forgive me. Last night or the day before, I had a dream where I finally, in my dream, I was going to a Torah reading, something that I always done in my past, but it was more in the present. And in my dream, I said, no, I'm not doing that. Is that in the dream when I can say no? Is that even a step further for him, or is that just like anything else? It doesn't really matter because it's a dream.
I don't know that I can answer that. I'd have to have actually followed it first.
Okay. In the dream, I was dreaming that like it was making these choices, like whoring, wickedness, greed. It was like those kind of choices.
Right. And you said no to doing those things.
And I said no to that finally in a dream. For a while.
That's part of your subconscious trying to work that all out and get the strength. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so, but that's a step further for...
Possibly.
Okay, because I was wondering if it's dream is a dream or if it's actually means something.
It's hard to know.
Okay.
Okay, it's hard to know.
I was hoping you'd say yes.
I'm not a dream interpreter.
No, I know.
Okay. I do a lot of things, but I'm not, people do call here on a regular basis trying to get me to interpret dreams. I'm not a dream interpreter.
That's a different walk.
Okay, yeah. All right, Brian?
Thought it was great when you started teaching about the lame man by the pool, because this morning that was the exact episode that Ollie and Shannon and Esther and I watched on The Chosen, the exact episode. And when we were watching that and then during the teaching, it just really made me think, this man dealt with this issue for 38 years. And I can almost guarantee you he wasn't like, all right, I've got 6 more years before Messiah comes and heals me. This man thought he was going to be living with it forever. And then all of a sudden Messiah comes and heals him because of his belief. And on the concept of good
and
trust.
Wait. I got to say something because something just really hit me here, okay? Some of you are going to get really mad at me right now. All right? Because I was picturing this and the way you were describing it from the show, but also from the scripture we read. This man, you said that he'd been dealing with this for a long time. No, he hadn't. He's doing what a lot of you do. You're waiting just on the one miracle idea that you're waiting on. He did nothing. He showed up every day, all his hopes in one basket. What did he actually really do? We don't know he did anything. I mean, maybe he did try other things. It doesn't say that. It said he'd been coming there all the time. I mean, what are you actually doing to deal with your challenge? Okay? He didn't go seek this or seek, it doesn't say it. It just says he would go there and sit and get frustrated because he had all hopes in this one thing. And Yeshua basically walked in and said, you're looking at the wrong place. He says, you want to be healed? So get up, be healed. He's like, because you're just, in other words, it's like he's saying you could be healed if you really wanted to, but you've locked into this idea over here. And so how many of you are struggling with something that you came up with one solution, that's the only way this is going to work out, and you're going to die on that mountain, okay? Instead of looking for what else you could be doing. I mean, just, take that as a strong little nudge in the right direction, I guess. I don't know. Because I think some of you do that. You just lock in on one thing, and then that's now, if that thing never happens, that's it. Because, I agree with you. I don't think he was just waiting for Messiah. I think he was still banking on that pool that one day somehow somebody would get him in there in time. All right? But, All right, Brian?
Amen. And then it just made me think that hardly any of us are going through anything like that. Most of us can walk, we can talk, we can breathe, we can do all these amazing things. And we're expected to be good and trustworthy servants, and we spend a lot of our time grumbling and not taking into account all of the many things that we have that so many people don't. Like, he's opened our eyes, we're wearing tzitzit, we're walking in commandments. And I'm speaking about myself, too. It's like something happens and all of a sudden the world's ending. Instead of having trust in him and waiting 38 years or whatever it is for, you know what I mean? But in the meantime, we have so many things. We have a leadership that we talk about all the time that we have to go to in order to help us with these things. And being good and trustworthy, you go and you seek counsel, you figure it out. And part of figuring it out is getting that counsel. And just very inspirational.
Well, good. Listen. Okay, let's say you're that guy laying there by the pool. And you realize, this is I'm trying to get everybody a wake-up call here. And let's say you wake up and realize you're never getting in there on time without help, right? And he says it. He says, I can't get in there without help. At some point, wouldn't you try to figure out how to get help? Maybe you could find a way to make some money and then hire somebody to stand with you by the edge of the pool and block others from getting in so you can get in or something. Wouldn't you try to figure out a way to fix the problem? The problem wasn't he was sick. That was a problem. The problem was he hadn't figured out how to get the help he needed to get in the water. Now, I'm not backing up and endorsing this pool and this whole whatever thing that was going on there. I'm simply saying is, what effort are you putting in to creatively come up with a way to make happen what you need to happen? Because the only thing was a timing problem and he needed help. Well, then figure out how to maybe develop relationships with other people that will love you enough or like you enough, whatever, to want to help you. I mean, what are you doing that you can do to go towards the solution, right? Okay, I'll just throw that out there. All right, Chris.
Yeah, I think creativity is something that you have to have.
Yeah.
I was thinking about 3 John 1, verse 11. It's only one chapter, so. Verse 11, where it says, "Beloved ones, do not imitate the evil, but the good. The one who is doing good is of Elohim, but he who is doing evil has not seen Elohim." And I've always thought of that as all about you. But if you take the first part, it's talking about imitating, like when Paul says to imitate those that you're supposed to be following, then you could take the second part of it, the one who is doing good is of Elohim, as being the looking at someone, looking for somebody who is doing good and who is not doing evil. Because if they're doing evil, you can see that they're not seeing Elohim, the vertical structure of whoever you're following.
Right.
And in John 8, verse 47, Yeshua says, "He who is of Elohim hears the words of Elohim, therefore you do not hear because you are not of Elohim." And he's making the case for why he is of Elohim, or actually out of Elohim is that Greek word. So whether it's hearing or seeing, kind of like how Moshe saw the form in some way of Elohim on Mount Sinai and hearing the word, that's something that you don't get directly in this way. So you're not seeing Elohim directly, and what you're imitating, you're getting through a structure. So I didn't see it that way. I thought that was, I just thought of it as not all about you in verse 11, but seeing you imitate whoever, the right person, and it's that person you're looking for to be doing the following in right. That verse.
That's good. That's good. So again, it says, "Beloved ones, do not imitate the evil, but the good." He's telling you, go find ones that are doing this, because the one who's doing good is of Elohim, and the one who's doing evil is not. So that's part of why you should figure out who you want to mentor or model and be inspired by that way.
Yeah, and the Greek is mimeus or whatever, and it's like to mimic someone, and just like almost like a pantomime or something where you're like doing something in an exact way.
Exactly. So, yep. Yeah. Listen, you know, but also I want you to see that in 3 John, John clearly is saying very similar things to what Yeshua is saying in Matthew. You say the same thing with Paul and Titus is saying very similar things to what, you know, Yeshua is saying, and not in Matthew, in John 5, okay? So, I mean, I know it's John and 3 John and John in the Gospel of John, but what I'm just saying is they're showing that they are quoting the ideas and the message that Yeshua is giving in John 5. Okay? And that's where you can see the connections. All right, live stream.
From Anna Uden, says, "If the Bible has been tampered with, how can we fully trust it?"
Okay, so and I've covered this in parts all over the time, all over the different teachings and covered this. Look, everything that we do, okay, in terms of spiritually, is on faith, all right? I mean, whether the book has been tampered with or not, you still took it on faith that this was his book. I mean, you did. I mean, we have no, you know, we don't have like a video of God giving this to us or something, right? So, I mean, we take it on faith. We take it on faith, everything it says in it. Now, we have evidence that has been accumulated over time of archaeological and other historical things that back up what's in the book. And you have your life experience, etc. But we know that it's been tampered with. I mean, look, you know, because there's certain translations you won't use. Because over time, you realize they were poor translations, tampered with. Okay? I mean, a lot of you at some point maybe were using an NIV and then realized it meant non-inspired version. Okay? Or whatever, because it's got a lot of bad translation issues in it. Even though it's probably the most popular Bible out there, okay, in terms of sales. So you already know there's problems with what you have. Not the original stuff, but we just don't have the original. Now, the question is there a... You got to start at the very beginning. I feel like we're starting with really one-on-one stuff. Is there a God? Is there a creator? Okay. So if you say no, don't listen to anything else. If you say yes, then the question is, that means he created us. Did he have anything in mind for us? If the answer is yes, then you would have to ask the question, well, did he have any way to communicate with us what that was? What is his plan for us? What is his design? Why did he make us? What's his expectation? Okay? This is his expectation. It also tells us the history of how people handle that expectation, well and poorly and all that kind of stuff. So one of the things I use, you know, as a tool to figure out what I can trust is that I don't trust fully anything that doesn't appear in multiple writers' writings. Because two or three witnesses is a Torah instruction for verifying things. So I don't, that doesn't mean it's not true, whatever the one thing is that appears in one place. I'm not going to build much on that. I feel really strongly about things that are everywhere, right? We're reading John, Yeshua saying it. We're reading, well, 3 John's saying it's still John. We're reading Titus, Paul saying the same thing there. You know, you can go and find different writers saying the same exact thing. That's really strong, all right? Because you got to remember, these things were written originally individually in scrolls or eventually in some sort of a maybe even a bound form. But they weren't written as books until there was printing press and all things much later, right? So these things were in scrolls. They're written on parchments and things like that. And so you could alter one thing a little bit here or there, but you couldn't then go and fix everything everybody else said that was the same. It was very hard to do. See, we're used to it being in the 66 book form, where if you put this into some digital format, you can make a change and then change it everywhere. They couldn't do that, okay? So that's where those interesting, odd little things, like John all of a sudden referring to the Feast of the Jews, okay? Nobody else wrote that type of language, okay? But you can start saying, okay, that's a little odd. Okay? Now, it doesn't change the fact that the truth is here. You can find it. Almost everything important, if not everything important, is written by everybody, okay? Everybody's saying the same thing. If you want to know that, go listen to the heart of the matter, where I go from Genesis to Revelation, everybody's saying the same thing, okay? And so that's where we know we can trust it. And then we put it to the real test as we apply it. And we see, does it do what it claims it will do when applied? Any of you have any problem that when you applied it, you saw the result? No, right? You got the result, right? You do what he said, and you get the result he said you'll get. So, but I don't want to sugarcoat and blow whatever up your skirt, so to speak. I mean, this is spiritual, which means there has to be faith. There's no religious belief system or any kind of system that doesn't have faith as an element, because we don't have... You know, let's assume that this is all true, and one day Yeshua is walking the earth, sitting on the throne, all this stuff. That's going to be a whole different situation. He'll literally be here, sitting on the throne, doing all the things that we're told he's going to do. We don't have anything to point to except these stories and accounts and these messages that we have. And we have to decide whether or not this is real. And then you have to decide, well, if the creator created me, and there is a creator, we'll start at the beginning. Well, I believe there's a creator, and he made me. Then you have to ask the question. I asked this question. That's how I got into all of this to begin with. I'm 22, 23 years old. And I prayed, because I didn't have any relationship with him at all, or didn't even know he existed. And I said, look, if you exist, and you made me, and you expect me to do or not do anything, or you have any expectation for me, I have no idea what to do. I don't know if you exist. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know if you want me to do anything. So if you want me to do or not do or do be or not, whatever it is, you're going to have to get my attention and introduce yourself. And I believe that's what he did over the next couple of years, where certain things happened that brought me to this as the truth. Okay? That was my journey. I'll give you a real short version of it, you know? But we all have to go to that place where we have to understand, why do we believe this? Why do we know it's true? Look, a lot of your children, you raise in this, and then they go off somewhere else because they have not asked that question or found that answer. They need to believe that this is real. So they run off somewhere else. You'll be like, but they seem so into it when they were eight. Yeah, but they're not eight anymore. Now they're thinking. Okay? Sorry, did I just tell you that eight-year-olds don't think? Well, you already know that, okay? Or very little. I mean, you know, they realize they can make their own choices as they get older. And then they have to decide for themselves. That's why I say you can't assume your children are bubble pop. They're probably not. They have to have that personal journey experience. So it's a good question. And I'm not going to give you some, you know, Christian pastor like, well, of course it's the truth. Because no, I believe it's the truth. You might not. Okay, why do I believe it's the truth? Because of my journey with it. Okay? That's why you believe it's the truth if you do, and that's also why you don't if you don't, because of your journey. So I can't give you, like, step by step, that's how you can prove this is whatever. I can't give that to you. My journey took me through all kinds of stuff. Okay? History, archaeology. I mean, that was just the way I went through it. I went and did whatever I could look at. Okay? And in that journey, you know what I found? This is the truth, but it has had fingerprints all over it by human beings. Okay? It's been literally manhandled. Okay? But not to the point where the truth is not there. Right? Anyway. All right. Next question.
Okay, from Ashley Williams. Rabbi, what did Yeshua mean in John 5:30 when he was saying, of myself, I'm unable to do any matter? What is the matter he couldn't do?
No, he's talking about, when it comes back to, again, good works versus evil things. Like, he's giving these comparisons. He's saying, if it was of myself, I only do because I'm imitating. I trust him, I don't trust myself when it comes to those decisions. Okay, so, you know, when he says, I would not, of myself, I don't have the power to do the miracles I'm going to do, the other thing. This all comes from the Father. He's just trying to simply say, I am empowered and given the ability to do what I do because it's not coming from just me. Look, I'll say the same thing. There was a guy in our congregation years ago, you've heard me tell this story, said I wasn't qualified to do any of this stuff because he said I didn't have the Spirit because he said I didn't speak in tongues. So my response to him was exactly Yeshua-like. I said, so you think all these teachings that I do that you're all so impressed with is of myself? Okay? Of myself, you would not get all this. Now, I still have the ability to speak and I could entertain you, but the quality of the connections and the insights is not of myself. Okay? And that's what Yeshua's talking about. He says, of myself, I cannot do any of these things that I'm talking about. I get it from him. Okay? I'll say the same thing with me. If anything has ever come out of my mouth that was of any impact in your life in a positive way from Scripture and opened up your understanding of something, that did not come out of me. My voice said it. It came out of him. Okay? Those insights that I have. Because I have people, even in ministry, that when I sit with them, whatever, they'll watch me and say, where did you get that insight from? It's not from me, okay? That's what Yeshua was talking about. And that's how the vertical thing works, okay? All right, Chris?
Okay, I had a question about the Feast of the Jews. If that could be, instead of it being one of Yahweh's feasts, could it be actually a Feast of the Jews?
No, it was talking about one of the Leviticus 23 feasts. Yeah, no, it was absolutely showing that they were keeping these feasts, right? But he just threw that Feast of the Jews thing in there, which I don't think he put in there. I think others put that in there, okay? To separate, that's the Jews. Because remember, the thing that came up very quickly, you know, after the first century, or even late first century, was Judaizing as a really evil way to attack anybody to do anything that was looked at as being Jewish in the early Christianity, okay? And so these kind of things started popping up in copies of translations so that people would know, you don't need to do that. That was what the Jews were doing, okay? All right. Anything else, Rob?
Olivia Dearth, Romans 1:31, without discernment, covenant breakers, unloving, unforgiven, out of the overflow of the heart speaks. If our actions are Torah/Yeshua-like, but our thoughts can be unloving, unforgiven with ourselves and others, which is really in control, the thoughts or the actions. I think she's asking if that's okay. She's got
all right,
a question
look,
at the end.
Look. I'm going to guess. I think I know what she's asking. Okay, look. Stop thinking that you're ever, because I had this conversation with a couple of people this week. People struggle with their thoughts. What I mean by that is they think that somehow, at some point, you're going to control them so you don't have the thoughts you don't want to have anymore. And that's not going to happen, okay? They may diminish in frequency of having them, but they're going to keep popping up because they're part of the test to see what you're going to do with the thought. See, Yeshua didn't say, well, stop thinking like that. He said, take the thought into captivity, okay? You're going to have thoughts that are not appropriate. Okay, in whatever context, okay? So whatever it is, in whatever behavior it's going to be, you have thoughts that you know you shouldn't take action on. Now, you may have them often, especially when you tended to take action on them. So those are frequent thoughts, and you would act upon them. Now you're wanting to not do those things, so when you have the thought, you take it into captivity, which means you decide, no, I'm not just going to automatically think and act. I'm going to take that thought and say, let me evaluate that thought. I think I'm not going to do that. That's not something I should be doing. And then you toss the thought, right? You say, I'm just not going to do that. Over time, the consistent behavioral change, the pattern of behavior, will have the thoughts come up less frequently because you're tending not to follow through with those thoughts, all right? But don't think for a second that you're ever going to stop having the thoughts necessarily, okay? The thoughts will never go away permanently. It's like, I use the example of anybody who's been addicted. You have to know that you will always have that weak area in your life. You cannot go back and do those addictions, okay? That's why, you know, when someone's an alcoholic, they say, I am an alcoholic. Even if I haven't had a drink in 10 years, I know I can have this problem if I ever have one, right? And I promise you that the thought to have a drink never goes away. They will have it less frequently, maybe once they've gotten away from it for years and years and years, but it's still going to pop up every now and then. But you'll pray, take away these thoughts. People call me all the time, how do I get Abba to take away the thoughts? Stop whining and complaining about the thoughts. Just get really good and comfortable with rejecting the thought. Stop letting it bother you that the thought popped in your head. Just like, toss the thought aside. Get really good and quick at not. See, in the beginning, you're going to think about it for a second and consider it and then toss it. Later on, it's just going to be like, get out of my head, okay? Because you know and with confidence that you don't want to act upon it, you're not going to act upon it, so just, I don't even know why that keeps popping in my head. And by the way, that could be part of it is really Hasatan. Hasatan knows you used to do something, knows you have a weakness in an area, and is going to keep popping a thought in your head to see if you're serious. You know. Because you had the problem. The thought popped in your head because you had a problem, okay? Because you all know that thoughts have popped in your head over your lifetime that you really had no interest in, and you don't know why that weird thing popped in your head, and then it really never popped in your head again. The things that tend to pop in your head all the time is things you used to actually act upon and consider and dwell on and meditate on, and you have a desire to do whatever it was. So those things are going to keep coming to see, are you persisting in good, like we read? Or are you going to be ready to go off the tracks for a few seconds and go entertain this thought by giving it an action. All right, anything else?
Got just a couple more. Gian Jordan says, question, how can you know what he's showing you about himself and or in your life that, quote unquote, you're not seeing if you're, quote unquote, not seeing him or the thing he's trying to show you?
How can you know that he's showing you about himself or in your life, okay, that you're not seeing if you're not seeing him or the thing? Okay, he's trying to show you. All right, look. Part of this is counsel. Okay, but really, you know, if it says, don't do this, and you're still doing it, that you're really not seeing him. Not that you do it once, but if you're doing it on any kind of consistent basis, you're struggling. Because if you truly saw him, you wouldn't do. And I'm not just talking about actions. Some of you panic and give in to fear because you don't see him as trustworthy and in control. You don't have the emunah, okay? But you can't have the emunah if you don't see him right. Because emunah says you have to see him as causing or allowing all things so that all things are in his control, which means there's nothing to worry about. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't have concerns about certain things. Concern is realizing something may go wrong. I probably should be aware of it so I could do something if possible about it. Worry is a negative emotion where you're like, it disempowers you. Concern can empower you. I have a concern, so therefore I might need to do something to address this thing. Okay? So when you see him correctly, your emotional state will stabilize to quite a degree. Not perfect, depends on how bad it was, but it'll stabilize to a large degree. And also your actions will become more appropriate more consistently. So when you're asked, well, how can you know if what he's showing you about himself? It says you just have to go outside and look. Because he mostly wants you to know, I made all this. I brought you into this world. I could take you out of this world. I mean, this is all mine. So we're supposed to see all that just by looking at the creation. But sometimes, I watch people panic about things. It's like the person who calls me, I'm a new person at this, and I realize I need to keep Shabbat, but my job has me working 2 Saturdays a month. And I know I need to stop that. But if I tell my boss, he's going to fire me. Okay. What's the problem? Well, my boss will fire me. So why is that a problem? Well, I won't have a job. Well, you can't get a new one. So, in other words, where's your faith that Abba put you in a position where you might lose your job? Because maybe he's got a better one waiting for you, or he wants to see what you do to handle and trust him in this. Which the really funny thing is, at least 50% of the time, it's a job the person wished he could leave for years, hated, and now all of a sudden he's afraid he's going to lose it. I have those conversations all the time with people. Man, I need a new job. I can't stand this place. Blah, blah. And all of a sudden, then the boss decides, because he wants to take a feast, to fire him. Now he's like, oh, I love my job. I'm like, seriously? Really? Can I tell you something? There's no such thing as a good job. Okay? There are more lucrative jobs, more enjoyable jobs, I guess. But you're still a slave to the owner, to the employer. Okay? So stop worrying about the job. Do the job that you can get paid enough and enjoy to whatever most degree you can that doesn't cause you any struggle keeping Torah. But don't be afraid to find another job. You might need one anyway. Look, if whatever your job is and you can't pay your bills and do all your tithes properly and everything else without struggle, you need a different job anyway. Just saying, all right? But how can you know what he's showing you about himself in your life? What things is he doing for you that you're not noticing? The little miracles, small and great, every day. I mean, he's showing himself to you all the time. You've heard during the prayer and praise, I think Brian and Esther got up and some others got up and talked about these amazing things that are him showing himself to them, okay? And they didn't just get it the minute the struggle started. Okay, struggles have been going on for a while with certain things, and then people get these breakthroughs after they persist in saying, but I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to do what I can and make the effort, right? I don't know that I think it's kind of odd in a certain way that the guy just laying by the pool is the guy Yeshua heals, but, the guy was laying there not really doing anything. So in some ways, you can look at it as Yeshua healing someone who could not do anything anyway. Maybe he just really couldn't do anything, right? But he also wanted to stir up the leadership because he did it on Shabbat. you know. He liked to poke at their sort of commandments of men thing, you know, things they added. And he would poke at it a little bit. Say, guys, you know. And it happened quite a few times when he healed on Shabbat. Anyway. All right, next.
When he was talking about that, and when we was reading that, Rabbi, I mean, I guess in verse 14 in John 5, and Yeshua found the man that he healed at the set-apart place. So would this guy actually be following Torah, because he had probably go back to the set-apart place to present himself to the priest to show themselves healed?
It depends on, it doesn't say what his sickness was.
Yeah.
You know, it could not have been leprosy. He wouldn't have been allowed to be there. Okay, so, but, you know, he also may have been just going to the set-apart place to give praise and make an offering or some other thing, but that's where he wanted to go, because after all, he would just have been healed. I mean, where would you go? You might go to the temple, the closest place to where Yah would be, and praise him there, and, you know, Yeshua ran into him there. Okay? Next.
Okay, that's really the only relevant one, but we had somebody that came in and asked, when he's talking about circumcision, it says, if the eighth day was on a Shabbat, you know, would you still do the circumcision?
Yes. Look, you can do anything Yah says to do on Shabbat. If Yah says to walk around Jericho, then you can walk around Jericho. Because they walked around how many days? Seven. So was one of them a Shabbat? Sure. Okay. So, you know, if he says circumcise him on the eighth day, then you circumcise that boy on the eighth day, whatever day that falls on. Okay? Because that's what he commanded to do. Now, there's not a lot of things that I can think of that he actually commands that could fall on the Sabbath as you, that you would do. Okay, that is one of the few right there. But, you know, he commands that it be on the eighth day. He doesn't say unless it falls on Shabbat. All right? All right, next. Is that it? Did you say that was the last one that was kind of relevant?
Yeah, no more relevant questions, Rabbi.
All right. Did the children come down?